Hello, I'm Joseph Kassa, and welcome to this podcast where the AI team does a deep dive into some application of systems thinking.
Welcome back to the Deep Dive. You know, have you ever found yourself reading different textbooks on the, well, the exact same subject, only to feel like they're describing completely separate things? It's kind of baffling, right? Makes you wonder if they're even talking about the same field sometimes. Today, we're diving into that exact puzzle, but specifically looking at systems engineering. Our mission here is to explore a preliminary analysis looking back over 7 decades of literature, and we're asking a really big question. Is this diversity we see in the texts just, you know, author preference? Or could it actually be evidence of a major paradigm shift? Maybe one that helps explain why so many projects seem to, well, struggle to define the right problem before they very efficiently build the wrong solution. Our source material uses some interesting tools for this AI-assisted analysis and this framework called Holistic Thinking Perspectives, or HTPs, to try and get to the bottom of it.
And this isn't just, you know, some academic exercise. It's actually got really profound real-world implications. We're talking about how systems engineering is taught, how it's actually practiced on the ground, and ultimately whether projects actually succeed or, well, fail. This deep dive, it really offers a framework for understanding some of the tensions we're seeing play out in the field right now.
Okay, let's unpack that a bit. So the source material is suggesting what we're seeing isn't just like minor variations. It's maybe a fundamental transformation, almost like there are two distinct, maybe even competing ways of thinking paradigms within systems engineering itself. Can you maybe outline those two core ideas for us?
Yeah, absolutely. The research really seems to zero in on two potential paradigms. So first, you've got what they call the engineering science paradigm. This was apparently dominant from about the 1950s through the 1980s. And this approach was really heavily focused on analytical problem solving. Big question was, what should we actually build? You know, it was all about mathematical rigor, conceptual design, really innovative thinking to tackle problems nobody had solved before. Then, starting around the 1990s up to now, we see the rise of something different termed the administrative paradigm. And this one, it's more centered on administrative processes. Its guiding question is more like, how do we represent what we've already decided to build? It's a pretty crucial difference in focus, I think.
That does sound like a really profound shift in purpose.
Yeah.
How do these two ways of thinking actually clash, you know, in a real project? Where does the friction usually happen? And importantly, this study, it's preliminary, yes, but it's not just theory, right? It uses that AI analysis to map out 3 distinct phases in how the field evolved.
Right. The friction often crops up because one paradigm is really digging into discovering the actual problem and figuring out the best solution space, while the other is, well, more focused on managing the rollout of a solution that's kind of already assumed to be the right one. And that leads us straight into the first phase they identified, the Engineering Science Foundation. This basically covers the 1950s through the 1980s. Now, during this era, the textbooks were pretty heavy on the math. We're talking maybe 35 to 50% of the content. Lots of differential equations, optimization theory, statistical analysis, that kind of thing. And the focus was overwhelmingly on innovation. Something like 78% of the material was about developing new methods for these really unprecedented challenges. Systems engineering back then was seen as, you know, applied engineering science, definitely not just project management.
Interesting. Are there any really good historical examples that capture that engineering science approach? Maybe something from a, you know, a really defining moment in engineering history?
Oh, definitely. I mean, the classic example has to be the early NASA systems engineering practices, the ones that really drove the Apollo mission's success. That whole effort was deeply rooted in this engineering science way of thinking. It's even noted in their own 1995 systems engineering handbook. Their success really depended on that intense, rigorous analytical work before they started building hardware.
Oh, okay. So that was the foundation. What then caused the big shift? Did the research point to a specific event or turning point that kicked off phase two, the standardization transition from the 90s to the 2010s?
Yeah, it seems like some significant institutional changes played a big role. The big one mentioned is the formation of INCOS. That's the International Council on Systems Engineering back in 1991. And also the evolution of their handbook, you know, moving from the old military standard MIL-STD 499B towards the international standard ISO 15288. These are seen as pretty key markers. And during this period, you really see the emphasis change. The administrative process stuff in textbooks, it like soared to around 65% of the content. Meanwhile, the mathematical content, it dropped way down, maybe 15 to 25%. Suddenly, things like standards compliance and project management coordination became the main organizing ideas, making up about 82% of the content in some texts. So the core activity really shifted, you know, from technical problem solving to more organizational coordination and administrative oversight being seen as the main job. And even early Department of Defense standards like MIL-STD 499 and IC 1220, they explicitly talked about management or process rather than the, you know, the really conceptual analytical parts of systems analysis.
Right, that makes sense. So that leads us to now phase three, current fragmentation from the 2010s onwards. And the research suggests the literature today isn't monolithic either. It shows, what, four distinct approaches? Let's maybe walk through those. First up are the administrative paradigm conformists. That's the dominant ones, apparently, like 70% market share. And they have minimal math, maybe 10, 15%, really focused on compliance. And within this, MBSE model-based systems engineering is more about formal documentation and tracing requirements than analytical innovation. You mentioned examples like Kosikoff or Wasson.
Exactly. That's the biggest group. But then you have the paradigm integration attempts. These hold maybe 15% of the market. These books actually keep a high level of mathematical content, maybe 40 to 60%. And they sometimes push back against the purely administrative view, trying to bring back that analytical systems analysis focus. You often see them suggesting maybe different approaches for routine projects versus really innovative ones. And the heavy math stuff might be treated as like advanced topics. Think Sage and Armstrong or Hitchens, maybe.
Okay, third group.
Third, you've got the engineering science paradigm preservationists. Smaller group, maybe 10% market share. These folks are really sticking to the original technical foundations. High math content, 40, 60% again, still very focused on innovation. And they're often quite explicit about rejecting the administrative shift, arguing that, you know, real systems analysis is absolutely essential for tackling complex problems. Kasser and Eisner are examples here.
And the last one, just 5%.
Yeah, the last category is domain-specific focus. These are more like hybrids tailored to specific industries, maybe aerospace, for example. They tend to blend analytical and administrative stuff based on the context.
So four different streams running concurrently.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And this kind of fragmentation, it really echoes Thomas Kuhn's ideas about paradigm shifts, doesn't it? The administrative paradigm seems to have become so dominant that it might have sort of redefined what counts as real systems engineering practice in many circles, pushing that original engineering science focus to the edges.
And the research didn't just stop at categorizing books, right? It found some specific, pretty compelling evidence showing this transformation happening over time. What were some key examples?
Yeah, they dug into some specifics. One really clear illustration is looking at the evolution of the roles of the systems engineer. Back in 1969, G.M. Jenkins described 12 roles. His roles were all about analytical skill, technical understanding, using mathematical models, optimization, things like distinguishing the wood from the trees, stimulating technical debate, making sure techniques were used sensibly, very engineering science paradigm stuff. Fast forward to 1996, and Sarah Scher defines 12 roles, and hers. They reflect that emerging administrative paradigm, much more focus on life cycle management, program management tasks, coordinating processes, integrating different organizational parts. It's a really stark difference in emphasis.
Wow, yeah, side by side, that's quite telling. Any other examples?
Well, another big one is the evolution of the NASA Systems Engineering Handbook itself. As we said, NASA's early practices, the ones linked to Apollo success, were classic engineering science. But if you look at their later handbooks, like the 2007 or 2016 versions, you see this clear convergence with INCOSI's process-focused frameworks. They explicitly align with that ISO-I 6288 standard. It shows how the administrative paradigm became, you know, institutionalized, even in places like NASA.
Okay, so this brings up a really important point for today. Model-based systems engineering, MBSE, it's everywhere now. How does MBSE actually function differently depending on which paradigm you're operating in?
That's a really critical question, and the distinction is pretty sharp. If you think about MBSE from the engineering science paradigm perspective, it's primarily a tool for solution synthesis, meaning it's part of the creative, analytical heavy lifting, understanding the real underlying problem, generating different potential solution concepts, analyzing the trade-offs, often using mathematical models, and fundamentally deciding what kind of system you should even be building. It's about establishing that solid conceptual baseline first.
Right, the what.
Exactly. But if you look at MBSE within the administrative paradigm, its role shifts more towards solution representation. So here, it's mainly about modeling a solution concept that somebody has already come up with. The focus is on ensuring the model is consistent, providing traceability back to requirements, managing the complexity of the chosen design through structured diagrams, and basically facilitating communication about the path already decided.
Representing the how, essentially.
Yeah, pretty much. And the source material flags a really serious warning here. It quotes work by Long and Scott from 2011, and also Martin back in 1997. They observed that MBSE, especially when used mainly within that administrative framework, often just assumes the problem is already well understood. It kind of bypasses those crucial early phases of really structuring the problem and fostering innovation. And this leads to that huge risk of, as they put it, solving the wrong problem efficiently. You build the wrong thing, but you do it very, very efficiently according to process.
Oof. That phrase, solving the wrong problem efficiently, that really lands. It feels like such a fundamental potential misstep. Okay, this seems like a good point to bring in another piece of evidence the research looked at. The INCO certification program, ACEP, given everything we've just discussed about the two paradigms, what are the implications of how that certification program is structured?
Well, the research points out that the program is based almost entirely on the INCO Systems Engineering Handbook. And that handbook, as we discussed, heavily emphasizes those ISO 15288 compliant processes. Things like stakeholder needs elicitation, requirements management, governing the lifecycle processes, and the exams themselves. They're largely content recall, multiple choice tests. Crucially, there's generally no requirement to demonstrate skills in analytical problem solving, systems analysis, simulation, or optimization, which are, you know, the intellectual bedrock of that engineering science paradigm. So the structure itself inevitably reinforces the administrative paradigm. It validates a specific skill set and, perhaps unintentionally, could marginalize the engineering science approach in how professionals are prepared and certified.
So stepping back, if this hypothesis about the paradigm shift holds water, what are the bigger, maybe systemic consequences for the field as a whole? Where does this really manifest?
The implications could be pretty widespread. First, you potentially get educational fragmentation, textbooks reflecting competing paradigms, which has to be confusing for students, right? And it leads to inconsistent preparation for the workforce. Second, you likely see project approach variations. Teams trained differently might really struggle to coordinate or even communicate effectively because their fundamental approach and priorities differ. And third, it contributes to this ongoing professional identity crisis. These constant debates about what real systems engineering is or should be.
And the research suggests this shift might have actually created a fundamental gap in how systems engineering is often practiced today. How directly does that impact project outcomes? Like, in measurable ways?
It could have a very direct impact, yeah. Think back to those early successes, like the moon landing. Projects guided by the engineering science paradigm often succeeded because they invested heavily in that rigorous front-end systems analysis. That's where they converted often a fuzzy stakeholder needs into a complete, clear set of system requirements. That solid analytical foundation then allowed the administrative support functions, the management, the process to operate effectively on the right problem. Now, contrast that with today. The apparent lack in some areas of that rigorous front-end work, the part that really determines what should be built before diving into how to build it well, the research suggests this might be a systematic contributor to the kind of persistent problems we hear about. Things like major cost overruns, schedule delays, systems not meeting performance goals, especially in large programs like defense acquisition. A 2025 GAO report is even cited as documenting these persistent shortfalls. So yeah, potentially very measurable consequences.
Wow. Okay, so given how maybe entrenched the administrative paradigm has become, especially being reinforced by things like certification, how hard would it actually be to reintegrate more of that analytical rigor back into education and professional certification? What are the practical roadblocks?
Oh, it's incredibly challenging. Think about it. INCOSI's certification, like many professional certifications, relies on having consistent, defensible criteria. If you suddenly try to introduce significant new technical requirements, like demanding proven skills in mathematical modeling or conceptual systems analysis, you create a major discontinuity. It immediately raises questions about fairness for everyone already certified under the existing standard. There could even be legal defensibility issues, especially since these credentials often get written into contracts or are used in safety-critical fields. Credentialing bodies generally face huge hurdles when they try to fundamentally change their frameworks. Often, what they do instead is maybe introduce specialist tracks or advanced certifications rather than overhaul the foundational ones. And this kind of structural inertia, even if well-intentioned, can end up inadvertently locking in the dominance of the existing paradigm, in this case, the administrative one.
Right, that makes sense. It's a complex problem. So this research is preliminary, as we've said, but it definitely cracks open the door to a lot of really important questions for future, more systematic investigation, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Loads of questions come up, like, do practicing systems engineers today really fall neatly into one paradigm, or do most people actually blend both in their day-to-day work? That would be fascinating to know.
Yeah, and are project outcomes actually correlated with which paradigm gets more emphasis on a given project?
Yeah.
Does it make a difference?
Exactly. And do different industries or even different regions of the world show different patterns? How are universities actually teaching this stuff? Do their curricula lean one way or the other? And what does that mean for the skills graduates bring to the table?
And maybe even, does the emphasis, whether it's more administrative or more analytical, systematically affect the return on investment for systems engineering effort?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's work, like Eric Honor's, suggesting that investing around 15% of project budget in SE leads to better outcomes.
Right. But his study didn't differentiate what kind of systems engineering investment that was. Was it predominantly administrative process effort, or was it front-end analytical effort?
Yeah.
That distinction could be crucial.
So lots to explore still.
For sure. But even as a preliminary framework, it has immense practical value right now, I think. It helps make sense of why, as you said at the start, different textbooks and training programs can feel like they're talking about completely different disciplines, even under the same banner of systems engineering. And ultimately, it really suggests that the most successful systems engineering, especially for complex challenges, probably requires a really thoughtful integration of both sides. The analytical power to understand and define the right problem, and the administrative coordination to manage the development of the solution effectively.
It definitely provides a powerful and, importantly, a testable framework for understanding how the field got here and where it might be going. So as you, our listener, go out and think about this, maybe armed with this deeper perspective on systems engineering, here's something to chew on. If the administrative paradigm on its own carries that risk of efficiently delivering the wrong system, what does that imply about the ultimate responsibility of a systems engineer today, especially as the world gets more and more complex?
Yeah, that's the core question, isn't it? This deep dive really suggests that maybe the biggest challenge and also the biggest opportunity for systems engineering moving forward isn't about picking one paradigm over the other. It's probably about finding the best ways to blend the problem-solving creativity of engineering science with the essential organizational coordination of the administrative processes. At the end of the day, it has to be about building the right system and building it effectively.
Well, we hope this deep dive has helped you connect some new dots and maybe given you a fresh lens to look through.
I hope you enjoyed today's deep dive. Why not take a moment and join the discussion in the LinkedIn group, Tackling Complex Problems? Take care.